thought for today. You know a wise man by his questions. You know a wise man by his questions. You know a wise man by his questions. You wanted to hear the story about Babaji. Well, there was a person who wanted to meet Babaji. I will say the person was Garrod. And Garrod wanted to meet Babaji because Garrod was on his spiritual path, very sincerely. And Garrod heard that Babaji was in the Himalaya Mountains somewhere, and that he was up very high, and that to get there you had to go over some pretty rough territory. So Garrod donned his hiking boots that every Swiss person feels they have to wear whenever they walk up a mountain, and he donned his hiking clothes, his rough outer exterior pants and shirt and his jacket and his gloves, his hat. He was all ready for a great trek into the Himalayan mountains to find Babaji. And so he begins. And he walks, and he walks, and he walks by himself. And he comes to the foothills and walks through the foothills up into the mountains. And the terrain is getting more and more dense. And he climbs through bushes, and he climbs around trees. And up the side of the mountain he goes. It takes a considerable time. And as he goes up the mountain, he has trouble gaining a foothold. And he's up at 8,000 feet and still going up. And he's really giving his best effort to it. He's already drained his water bottle. He's already eaten all the energy bars that he brought along to give him strength to make this journey. And so his load seems to be very heavy, and so he casts off his backpack, since there's really no more food or water in it. And he climbs and he climbs. And the bushes tear at his clothing, and pretty soon his clothing is almost shreds. And he's climbing further and further, and one of his shoes is lost. And he's climbing. Almost naked, he's climbing up this mountain. It's cold, but he has an urge to go and see Babaji, because he was told that Babaji had a healing ability which would heal some problems he had in his life that were very serious to him. So he kept climbing. He kept climbing and climbing until he saw a ledge up ahead. And he climbed up to that ledge, and it was very difficult to get over the ledge because it was rather a steep area before it. But he climbed up there, and he was hanging on by his fingertips. And someone came to the edge of the ledge, and he said to them, "Is this where Babaji is?" And the person said, "Yes." He said, "Well, help me, I want to see him." And the person walked away. And Garrod thought that was very unfriendly. But he kept his finger holds and pulled himself up on the ledge. Now he was bleeding, and he was hurting. And he felt very miserable that no one offered him help when there was a whole group of people sitting around talking to someone. And he went over there, and he stood there looking bedraggled and looking very unhappy. And he says, "Is this where Babaji is?" And the people said, "Yes." He says, "Well, I've come to see Babaji. I have a very important problem I have to work with him on." And the people said, "Sit down." So he sat down with the people, and one of them brought him a blanket, and he wrapped the blanket around himself. And as he sat there, he listened as Babaji was speaking. And Babaji was telling the group that the desire for something is not what counts. It's the recognition within yourself that your desire is already fulfilled. This is what all life is all about. That your human nature is already fulfilled, and that you have no desires for anything. You have only the inner realization of fulfillment. And Gerd listened to these words and he thought, gee, that's pretty powerful. But I still have a great desire to have this healing. And the days went by, in fact the weeks went by, and Gerd sat there in this group. He no longer had the one shoe on his foot, that was gone now too, and the rest of his clothing were gone, and he sat there wrapped in his blanket, and he was comfortable. His wounds had healed, and he had eaten the sparse diet that was available to him there. And he was coming along just fine. And then one day Babaji said, Gerd, you have something in your heart that you have never fulfilled. And Gerd instantly knew what that was. And he said, yes, I do. And Babaji said, well, would you like to fulfill that now? Oh, yes. Yes, more than anything in the world. And so Babaji said, tell me what your desire is. He said, I've always desired to be very rich and in charge of many people and just be my own boss and just be my own world. I've always wanted that. Babaji said, so it is. And he snapped his finger. And Gerd was the Maharishi of a territory in India where he had infinite wealth. He had all these wonderful elephants, all decorated for his purposes. He was surrounded by a whole group of people, which looked a great deal like the people he had met there with Babaji. And Babaji was his chief minister, but he didn't know him as Babaji. He just knew that he had a chief minister. And so, for what seemed like several years, he lived in this great prosperity. In this great abundance, everything at his fingertips, everything he could want. And the desires of the people as they came to him with questions. And he thought those were surely not the questions of a wise man because they were so mundane. How do I get along with my neighbor? How do I live with my wife or live with my husband? How can I raise my children more practically? My neighbor stole my pig, what do I do? My neighbor is unkind to me, what do I do? My world is not going the way I want. Crabbing, 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 bitching, bitching, bitching. The people came to him with all their problems. That was the price of being a Maharishi. And so, soon, after many years, but soon he tired of this opulence, this responsibility, and he thought to himself, oh, I would give anything to not have this responsibility. And with a snap of the Maharishi's finger and a snap of Babaji's finger, pop, there they were back on the side of the mountain, sitting in their circle. And Babaji said to Gerd, do you have any more desires? And Gerd said, none. And Babaji says, you are now freed of all desire. How wonderful that is. Now what do you want to do with yourself? He said, I am content. I am at peace. And Babaji said, very good, very good. Should you ever see the world's desires and feel that any of them belong to you, should you ever see anything in the outer that you would like to have, remember, with them come great responsibilities. With them come great responsibilities to perform for your world. And if you want to perform for your world, then go right ahead and take with you the great titles of responsibility, of Maharishi, of King, of Master. If you want those things, you'll have them. But the day that you can lay them aside and just be yourself and have fun, enjoy who you are, then you are a master. Until that time, you are a slave. A slave of your desires, a slave of your passions, a slave of all the things that you think are important. And he talked to the Babaji and he said, how can I ensure that I will not fall into that trap again? And Babaji said, right now you're naked. Right now you're vulnerable. Right now you could go either way. But the moment you develop within yourself self-discipline, you can never be drawn off track. You can never be taken away from wherever it is that you want to be, never. You are a free being. You are free of any outer control. Now, do you want that? Oh, yes. Well, how do you get that? First, you do it in the little things. You learn self-discipline in the little things. You see, Gerd was beginning to learn to ask the questions of a wise man, not the questions of how do I get wealth, how do I get fame, how do I get control, how can I be happy, but how can I self-discipline myself? Now, you can either go to a teacher, a sharer, work with that person to guide you in your awareness of your self-discipline, or you can do it yourself. It's more difficult to do it yourself because you don't always realize what you're doing. But for instance, should you do it yourself, every word you speak, you would stand behind it as though it was the most sacred word on earth. Every thought you think, you would bring to its fulfillment, you would bring to its manifestation, totally. Everything you take responsibility for. Remember our story about Herbert Marti. Herbert Marti was taking a trip to Korea. And he said, Stephen, why don't you come along? And I said, are you inviting him to come along? Yes. He can go if he wants to. So he said, great. And then I said, buy his ticket for him. He says, oh, I wasn't going to pay for it. I said, well, you cannot invite someone to go somewhere unless you have agreed that you're going to take care of all the expenses. Because the moment you say, would you like to come, you're inviting them as your guest, and you're responsible for all of their needs. You're responsible for their ticket, for their food, for their lodging. You're responsible for their clothing, for anything that they need, anything. And so, reluctantly, he paid. He didn't realize what he was doing, but he was learning self-discipline. Herbert Marti was learning self-discipline the hard way, as we all do from time to time. we were in Las Vegas, and we did what I never do, is to invite anyone to come anywhere. I say you're welcome, but it must be your choice. And so we invited a lady to come to the seminar, and she said, oh, later, thank you very much. I'll be your guest. You're paying my way. And I said, oh, I guess so. If that's what we said to you, then that's what we do. So we pay her way. We'll pay her way not because we should do it, but because we said we would do it. We said, you are my guest. What is it that I always say to anyone who comes to campus? You are welcome, but you're your own guest. I will not be your housekeeper. I will not be your guide. I will not be the person who takes care of you here. That is up to you. The campus is available for anyone, and anyone can come here and pay their way. Now, she wants to come, so she'll come. But we will learn not to use the words, please come, as though they are our guest. We'll say, you are welcome. But if you come or not, that's up to you. If you handle your own way. You see, self-discipline is very difficult. It's very difficult because it's very subtle. It means that we stand behind everything we say, whatever it is we say. Whatever it is we agree to do, we stand behind it. If it means that we're broke because we have made a foolish statement, then we're broke. We cannot ever open our mouth or open our thought in the world without taking responsibility for it and think that we're moving on our master path. Because as Babaji said to Garrett, what is it that's in your heart? And so Garrett experienced that. And when he walked away from that experience, he walked away as a master, totally in charge of his thought, his ideas, his world. You say, well, that was kind of nice to snap your finger and have that happen. Yes, it was. But you do that all the time. You snap your finger and you have it happen all the time. Now, yesterday at breakfast, John made the breakfast. I have taken all of you into the kitchen. I think you were here at the time, maybe not. But I've taken all of you in the kitchen and I showed you how to cook eggs so that the eggs are perfect. You cook them on medium heat. You cook them gently. You don't burn the bottom. You don't make the yellow on top like a solid boiled egg. You have it just gently covered and it's still soft and the yolk is still freshly soft. Now, John served me breakfast yesterday, his first time during his program, and I said, John, the bottom of the eggs are dark and the yolk is hard. Now, what John should have done was immediately take it away and make it proper. And if he did not do it the second time, he should do it the third time and the fourth time. We're paying for the eggs while he's learning. But he is getting hot under the collar. Says, can't I ever do anything right for you? You know, must you always be bitchy about everything? Yeah, that's my job. My job is to expect the best out of all of you, to expect perfection out of all of you. And if I have to pay for your perfection, I'll pay for it. That's what you're here for. The university pays for that food that we throw away. The university pays for all. It's just your time. And just your attitude, and just your gentleness. Can you give it? Can you give it? Do you think that you're so smart that you can do it. Now, Anita was cooking the bacon, and when she cooked the bacon, I don't know what she had in mind, but I haven't told her about this yet, but she cooked the bacon as though she were just warming it up. And it was fatty, it was unattractive, it was not fried bacon. The bacon should have had almost all the fat gone from it as she cooked it. So that there was just a crispness and a tenderness at the same time, where you just break it, but yet it's still soft, it's still lovely. Now, will she cook bacon right the next time? Probably not, but she'll work at it. She'll work at it if she cares. And she will become the most excellent bacon maker ever, because she will give it her love. And John will make the most perfect eggs, from my point of view, where they're not burned on the bottom, and put the cover over the top just to let the top of the egg become firm, but still have the yellow be soft. Herb, that is so mundane, that is so ordinary. Yes, it is, isn't it? But that's what this program is all about. When Garrett went up to see Babaji, Babaji didn't say, "Garrett, that is the most mundane, ordinary thing you could ever want. Riches, money, nonsense." So he said, "Garrett, if that's your desire, then here it is." Now, did Garrett really become a Maharishi? Did Garrett really have all that control of all that money and all those people? Did all those people really come? Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But that's just a story. No, it isn't. Anything that I tell you ever is true. And anything that you tell me ever is true. Whether it's the flight of your imagination, which is true, or whether it's the appearance in the relative world, which is an appearance in the relative world, it doesn't matter. Learn discipline. You know a wise man by the questions that he asks. What sort of questions do you ask? What sort of attitudes do you have in your mind? This morning, I walked in here at 5 minutes after. Sylvia was in the bathroom with her knitting. What she was doing in the bathroom with her knitting, I have no idea. And 2 or 3 minutes passed, and then she came in here. And you were all sitting here knitting away, and that's just fine. You're supposed to be knitting. At 5 after, you're supposed to be knitting. And at 10 after, you stop everything, put your knitting aside, stop everything, put your knitting aside, and have silent meditation for 5 minutes. Now, every morning somebody is in the bathroom. If you cannot figure out how to do your bathroom duties before you come in here for this important time, we'll just not have it anymore. I'll just cease having this particular meditation gift, this particular discipline gift for you. It's not a threat. It's not a threat. But if you don't want it, I certainly don't want to force anything on you. I don't want you ever to have to do anything you don't want to do. But if you want to do it, I want you to be able to do it. And for having one person in the room who doesn't do it, that's not good. One morning it's Ingeborg in the bathroom. Another morning it's Gerd in the bathroom. Another morning it's one of the rest of you in the bathroom. I mean, my goodness, I know my bathroom is nice, but I didn't know it was that inviting. Or you come late, or whatever. You have each dedicated yourself to coming here and participating in this morning program with all your heart and all your soul and all your being, because you know you're walking your master path. I'm not the path. You say you're walking the master path. Self-discipline is not the path. The path is when you like yourself and you're having fun. Oh, that's easy. That I can do very well. No, you can't. If you make a promise to yourself and you don't do it, you don't like yourself, I guarantee you. If you agree to do anything and you don't do it, you don't like yourself. You're not happy with yourself. If you disrespect your sharer, which most of you do very regularly, you don't like yourself. How do we disrespect our sharer? By not living up to what you promised yourself to do. Because I'm here to guide you in self-disciplining yourself. I don't self-discipline you. That's up to you. But I guide you in that self-discipline. I am your reflection. I am saying, what are you doing in the bathroom when you're supposed to be there? What is this light doing on that should be off? Who put the plug out and didn't put it back in again, and then put it back in the wrong place? Even after I said, in the back, and the back is there, and the front is here. Oh, how interesting. The back is there, and the front is here. Do you understand what I'm saying? Listen. Listen. If I say anything to you, and you think that the words that I say to you are words that are beneficial on your path, then listen. Listen very carefully. I joke with you about things, but I never joke. I have fun with you, but I never have fun. I always enjoy myself and have fun from that point of view, but it doesn't make me fun to see you struggle to be yourself. I see through that, as you do, to know who you really are and who you can really express yourself as. But ask your questions. Ask your questions. And when you ask your questions, then what happens? When you ask your questions, you get your answers. And what is your answer? Your answer is, follow your heart. Listen within. Do whatever you're guided to do. But please try to avoid killing the teacher. Because when you get to that point, then you're in trouble. I have met many masters myself. I've been very privileged in doing that. And even though I could excel those fellows in many areas, I went there with humility. The Maharishi Mahesh Yogi is a fine individual. And I studied TM with him in Los Angeles. As I was editor of the Science of Mind magazine, my job was to go and interview him and see what was going on. But I didn't do that. I went there and took his program. I went there as a person who was being a chela, being a student, a learner. And I learned. And I learned in humility. And as I finished the course, and I gave him the handkerchief and the rose that was called upon to be given to him, he said this statement to me, which I think was very important for all of you to know for yourself. He said, thank you for your presence in this course. You could have taught it better than I have. Now you see, when you go with a truly humble heart, when you go with great dignity and respect, they recognize who and what you are, even before you recognize who and what you are. And it's a great honor. I'm not saying this to put a feather in my hat. I've got lots of feathers in my hat. I don't need that. And neither do you. But I'm saying this to show you the kind of humility that's necessary if you're going to walk your spiritual path. Always pay your way. always fulfill your promises. Always do whatever you agree to do. And if you agree on anything and it's been proved, follow it. Because that's who you are. You know a wise man by his questions. What sort of questions are you asking now? You know a wise man by his questions. I love you.